busy as a spider spinning daydreams.
I'm as giddy as a baby on a swing.
I haven't seen a crocus or a rosebud.
Bob Roberts Commentary, brought to you by Lyle Moving and Storage, your North American Van Lines agent serving homes and industry throughout the West. Today's commentary right after this word from Lyle.
This is Bob Roberts for Lyle North American Moving and Storage. Over the years, the subject of burgeoning bureaucracy has become one of my favorite subjects, or pet peeves, depending upon how you look at it. Too often, big bureaucracy begets the kind of indifferent treatment that Americans, unfortunately, have come to expect in both business and governmental sectors. I'm happy to report that Lyle North American shares my disdain for second-class service, even though my commentary had nothing to do with creating their philosophy. The fact is, for years, Lyle Moving and Storage has led the industry with personalized service, a trademark dedicated to you and your individual moving problems. When you call Lyle from the Seattle area, you'll be talking to people like Sales Secretary Valerie Maceros, as well as representatives like Harry Chisholm, Ed Dixon, Richard Eastman, and Stan Stone. People who aren't about to lose you in the shuffle of a move. Now that you know Lyle North American, Lyle would like to know you by name.
Lyle Moving and Storage, the North American way.
There may be good news for broadcasters apart from the recent court ruling that the Federal Communications Commission action establishing the so-called Family Hour and requiring unwavering compliance with its restrictions violates the Constitution by inhibiting free speech. It now seems likely that another annoying bit of nonsense, the Fairness Doctrine, is on the way out. Curiously, if the Fairness Doctrine falls, the judgment could be a spin-off of another lawsuit in which abridgment of the freedom of speech is alleged. The issue begins with George Meany, president of the AFL-CIO, who petitioned the Columbia Broadcasting System for time to broadcast a message urging Americans to vote. Meany was refused by the network on the ground that, inasmuch as he earlier had endorsed Jimmy Carter's candidacy for president, the Get Out the Vote appeal might be interpreted as an appeal to support Carter. Now the AFL-CIO has taken the matter up with the Federal Communications Commission, asserting that by refusing Meany's request for time, the network violated the union's constitutional right of free speech. If the matter goes to court, legal observers believe the network's position will be that provisions of the Fairness Doctrine left no choice as to its action. If that were to be the case and the court were to decide that refusal of time to Meany was unconstitutional under the First Amendment, these observers point out that it would follow syllogistically that the Fairness Doctrine was unconstitutional. The interesting question then would become whether an act found to be unconstitutional in a particular sense could stand a constitutional challenge on general grounds. Many lawyers critical of the fairness doctrine believe the answer to that is no. This is Bob Roberts.
The Bob Roberts Commentary is brought to you twice each day by Lyle Moving and Storage, your North American Van Lines agent in Seattle and throughout the West. If you'd like a copy of today's commentary, just call KIXI during business hours at Main 3-6910.
Beautiful music, KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Gary Gilmore, back in Utah State Prison, is now on a hunger strike for the woman he loves. I'm Jerry Landay reporting on the CBS Radio Network. In the aftermath of an abortive suicide pact, Gilmore, in solitary confinement, says he will not eat until he's allowed to talk to Nicole Barrett. Mrs. Barrett has been removed from a hospital to a state mental institution, her commitment ordered by her mother, a move explained as an attempt to prevent another suicide attempt. The Utah Board of Pardons has scheduled a hearing December 6th on Gilmore's plea to be executed. More news after this.
How does your laxative work? Many brand name laxatives contain ingredients that expand in your stomach. That's how they work. We know a medicine that works differently. It's in the X-Lax pill. Overnight, the X-Lax pill gently stimulates your system's own regular rhythm. Stimulates your system for relief in the morning. No surprises, just relief in the morning. That's the X-Lax pill. Try it tonight with confidence. For occasional use only as directed, X-Lax pills.
Here in my hand is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains enough cold medicine to help relieve cold symptoms caused by every known virus. Think about that the next time you're sick. Sneezing, dripping, all clogged up. Then let us help you with real medicine, like Contact. We're number one in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact. Real medicine for real cold.
Take only as directed.
Leonard Weinglass, the attorney for Emily and William Harris, has charged that the release on bail of Patricia Hearst underscores a contradiction in the American society between the treatment of the rich and the poor. Miss Hearst, who is said to have supplied evidence against her one-time comrades, was released on $1.5 million bail Friday in the custody of her parents. She goes on trial in January on state robbery charges, the same charges on which the Harrises were convicted. Weinglass says Miss Hearst's status will help her case.
I think the general rule is true that In every situation in which a defendant is out on bail, the chances for an acquittal in the trial is appreciably increased. And Patricia Hearst, now being out on bail, will undergo her trial here in Los Angeles on a bailed status. And I think that will unquestionably help her case.
Wineglass says his clients, the Harrises, would have fared better at their trial if they had been free on bail. The Federal Reserve Board, careful and conservative in fine-tuning the economy, cut the discount rate by a quarter of a point Friday, evidence that the government is concerned about signs pointing to a stagnating economy. Tilford Gaines, an economist for New York's Manufacturers Hanover Trust Company, commented on the move.
If you have to borrow money, you pay less to borrow it. Beyond that, it means that money supply growth will probably be faster than it would have been otherwise. Which can have one of two or maybe both consequences of helping to stimulate the economy, which has been sluggish lately, or helping to trigger a new round of price inflation, one or both.
Gaines said he expects the stock market to react favorably to the move Monday. Bernadette Devlin, renowned in Northern Ireland as a leader of the Catholic cause, came to Boston Friday night to lecture those Bostonians of Irish descent who oppose school busing.
And it's time they realize that their enemy is not the black people of Boston, who want an equal share in the opportunity of a good education, who want to struggle against oppression. Their enemy are the people who told them that prejudice lies in the first place.
Devlin spoke at a national student conference against racism. She said that Americans of Irish descent cannot oppress the blacks of Boston while supporting at the same time the oppressed of Ulster. The black members of Congress have sent a collective letter to President-elect Carter urging him to back the Humphrey Hawkins full employment bill. The letter reminds Mr. Carter of the large black vote which helped elect him, 90% or more, in some parts of the East. Now this.
Dubonnet is a really special drink that started over in France, but you can enjoy it right here. Straight up, on the rocks, or mixed with your favorite beverage. Dubonnet before lunch, or dinner, or whatever you got cooking. There's a drink you may not know about. It sort of whispers what those others have to shout.
Dubonnet, anyway.
A taste that's not too sweet. Oh no, it's not too tired. Girl, it's made for those who finish what they start.
Dubonnet, any day, anyway, what you say.
Dubonnet, a product of USA. Dubonnet Corp, New York, New York.
Dubonnet.
The New York Post, the city's only afternoon daily, is being sold to Australian publisher Rupert Murdoch for a reputed $30 million. Murdoch owns more than 60 newspapers and magazines around the world, including two in Britain, both racy tabloids. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
And it's 6 minutes past 10 at KIXI in Seattle.
simple, Edward. Hide the money and use it when we want to.
No, it can't be that easy.
It is, Edward. It is.
Our mystery drama, The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg, was adapted from the Mark Twain classic especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Fred Gwynne. It is sponsored in part by CertainTeed Fiberglass Attic Insulation and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buy a Buick Opel anytime and you get a sensational little car. One that's comfortable, fun to drive, built by Isuzu. Equipped with things like a four-cylinder overhead cam Hemi engine, a short throw, four-speed manual transmission, plus reclining bucket seats, tinted glass, and rack and pinion steering. But there's more. Because due to popular demand, Buick's extended its special Opel gas offer through November 30th. Which means if you have the good sense to buy a new Opel now, Buick will reimburse you for 200 gallons of gasoline. And with 200 gallons of gas in a new Opel, you can do a lot of driving. Of course, your mileage may vary, but even at the estimated EPA city mileage of 23 miles per gallon, that's 4,600 miles. And on the highway, Opel's EPA estimate is 36 miles per gallon. The Buick Opel gas offer, it's still on. See your Buick Opel dealer soon for details. Make your best deal and Buick will make it better. 200 gallons better. In California, EPA estimates are lower.
Have you winterized your car yet? This is Gene King for the Council of Better Business Bureaus. You know, with winter not that far away, many motorists are looking for bargains in antifreeze products. But don't be fooled by so-called inexpensive solutions, which promise to do the same thing as regular antifreeze. These solutions usually contain methanol, a solution which boils away quickly. You could be hurting your car's engine rather than helping it run smoothly. You know, times are hard, but be sure you don't have to pay two prices. One for the so-called bargain antifreeze, and another for real antifreeze when the first solution boils away. Why not have your regular service station attendant check your antifreeze? If the mixture needs to be changed, don't buy just any antifreeze product. Check the label first. And while you're at it, it's a good idea to have the hoses and connections in the cooling system checked too. This is a common trouble spot in winter.
According to Mark Twain, you could cheat just about anybody. Back along the turn of the century, there was a town called Hadleyburg, which advertised itself as the most honest and upright place in the world. Incorruptible Hadleyburg, envied by its neighbors. And yet, one day, untainted, irreproachable Hadleyburg fell from grace. How did it happen? May I introduce you to Jack Halliday?
I knew it would happen one day, and I said so, but nobody listened to me. After all, I was only the editor of the Hadleyburg Gazette, and it was a paper that lost money. So what did I know about anything? Anyhow, putting the story together, here's what happened. One night, old man Richards, who works at the bank, he's one of the 19. I'll tell you who they are later. If I have to stop to explain everything at the beginning, I'll never get started. Well, old man Richards and his wife Mary are having supper.
Edward, I know you're tired, dear, but you must have your supper.
I'm not hungry. I'm so clear worn out. You know, Mary, it's hard to be poor at our time of life. Grinding away at a salary, another man's slave.
Oh, but Edward, we have our good name.
Yes. Yes. And that's everything. Don't mind my talk. It's just a moment's irritation. It doesn't mean anything. Who's that?
Someone's at the door.
Who would knock at this hour?
You sit, Edward, and finish your supper. I'll see who it is.
Who is it, Mary, dear?
What? That's strange. There's no one here.
But we distinctly heard someone knock.
Edward.
What is it?
Come here, quickly. Edward, look.
Look at what?
On the doorstep, this bundle.
It's a sack.
Oh, what does it mean?
It means someone left a sack on our doorstep.
Yes, but what for what reason?
Well, let's bring it inside and find out. Here, let me... Mary, I can't lift it.
Oh, well, now what do you suppose can be in it?
There's a piece of paper attached to it. Here, let me put on my spectacles. Yeah.
Oh, Edward, what does it say?
It says, to be published or the right man to be sought out by private inquiry, either will answer. This sack contains gold coin weighing 160 pounds and 4 ounces.
Edward!
Help me. Help me drag it inside.
Oh, mercy on us.
Quickly. Shut the door, Mary. Lock it.
Oh, my. Oh, Edward. What do you suppose?
The paper. The paper. There's more written on it.
Oh?
I was a gambler. A ruined gambler.
Oh.
I arrived at Hadleyburg late at night, starving and in rags. I begged for help, and I luckily begged of the right man. He gave me $20. He also gave me life and hope. I returned to the gambling table.
Oh, Edward, who would have given a stranger $20?
I became rich, and I remembered a remark he made. It gave me the inspiration to reform, and I have. I don't know who that man was, but I want him found, and I want him to have the money in this sack.
Oh, Edward, can you imagine how much money there is in there?
I would find him myself, but I cannot remain here. But this is an honest, incorruptible town, and I can trust you folks to help me.
Well, how can we help?
The man can be identified by the remark he made to me when he gave me the $20.
Oh.
Please publish or reveal what I have told you so far to anyone who you think might be the right man. If he says, yes, I was that man, and the remark I made was such and such, open the sack, and inside you will find a sealed envelope with the remark. If he has made the correct statement, give him the gold.
Oh, can you imagine, Edward? All that gold.
You may publish what I have revealed to you in your local paper and add the following instructions. 30 days from now, let the candidate appear at the town hall and hand his remark in a sealed envelope to the Reverend Mr. Burgess, and have the Reverend Mr. Burgess destroy the seals, open the sack, and verify the remark.
Someone in this town befriended a stranger, gave him $20, and now...
And now that man who set his bread afloat upon the waters shall become rich.
Oh, Edward, was it...
Was I that man? Was I that benefactor?
Yes.
No, Mary, no.
Oh, well, just as well. We could never accept that gold anyway. It was gambler's money.
We must make the inquiry public. All the other towns will be sick with envy, because no stranger would ever trust such a thing to any other town but Hadleyburg. Let me run over and tell Jack Halliday.
I didn't believe him till I came running back to the house with him. And there was the sack, and there was the letter, just as you've already heard it. Well, you remember I said Edward Richards was one of the 19? Sure. There are 19 leading citizens of Hadleyburg. Ed Richards is the least of them. The poorest, the most unimportant. He just about makes it under the wire. Well, these 19 set the tone and spirit of Hadleyburg. The 19 uncorruptibles. Just keep them in mind. Well, I said to Ed and Mary Richards, let's get this money right over to the bank and have old Pinkerton put it right in the vault. And we roused him out of bed, and he did it. And the whole town turned out. Everyone became so excited. You can imagine. Anyhow, poor old Edward Richards finally went home.
I think I know who that man was, Edward, who gave the stranger the $20.
Hmm?
Barclay Goodson.
Yes. Yes, you may be right, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been like Barclay. May he rest in peace.
Do you remember what he said about this town? It may have been honest, but it was narrow and self-righteous and stingy.
And I remember how he was hated for it, too. I guess he was the best hated man around here, except for Reverend Burgess.
Former Reverend Burgess.
Hmm?
Wait. Doesn't it seem odd that the stranger should have appointed Reverend Burgess to deliver the money?
Mary, Burgess isn't a bad man.
Oh, nonsense. He would still be a minister if he hadn't...
It was all because of the rumor of his being with that woman.
Well, he was guilty.
No. No, Mary, he wasn't. He was innocent.
Edward, what are you saying?
Mary, I was the only man who knew he was innocent.
What?
I could have saved him, but... Well, you know how wrought up the whole town was. It would have turned everyone against me. I just didn't have the courage.
I see.
I have another confession, Mary. When there was talk of riding him out of town on a rail, I sneaked over to his house and warned him to leave until things cooled off.
Oh, Edward, if anyone had found out...
It scares me yet. Everybody thought it was Goodson who warned him. And when folks started to mumble about him... Goodson buckled on his .45 and invited them to state their case to his face.
Oh, that was just like Goodson. The way it was like Goodson to give that $20 to a tramp.
Hmm? Why are we so sure it was Goodson?
It couldn't have been anyone else. Oh, why didn't we keep the gold?
Mary.
Why didn't you realize we could never find the right man because he's dead and buried in his grave?
Do you realize what
you... As long as the money would go to someone who needed it as badly as we do... Who would have been hurt?
You know how we've been raised, how we've been shielded against all temptation, till it's absolutely second nature not to hesitate for a moment when an honest thing has to be done.
Oh, I know. But it's an artificial honesty and as weak as water when temptation really comes, as we have seen this night.
Mary, there's no use going...
Oh, Lord knows I never had any doubt about my indestructible honesty until this minute.
Now, dear, you mustn't go on this...
Edward... Way. I know exactly what you're thinking right now.
You do?
You are thinking, if a body could only guess what the remark was that Goodson made to the stranger.
Yes. Then I feel ashamed about it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking myself.
Hmm. If only we could guess.
Maybe we don't have to guess.
What?
We're all creatures of habit, Edward.
Yes. I suppose that's...
You can almost predict what a person would say in a given situation. Now, take Mr. Pinkerton, the banker. Suppose a beggar were to ask him for charity. What would he say?
Why isn't an able-bodied man like you gainfully employed?
Exactly. Now, think of Goodson. What were some of the things Goodson used to say?
But, Mary...
Think. Now, think. What were Goodson's best-known remarks about... Charity, for instance.
Mary, even if I could remember, that's no guarantee that Goodson would have made the exact same statement on this particular night. Would it do any good?
Yes. Because then you would write it down on a piece of paper, seal it in an envelope, and hand it over to the Reverend Mr. Burgess.
And suppose Mr. Burgess then breaks open the seal, and it comes out that what I claim he said wasn't the remark at all.
Well, nothing then should... Nothing gained.
Do you realize the whole town will be there? The whole county? The whole state? I would be disgraced.
Oh, you could brazen it out.
Mary, I'd be terrified.
The money. Oh, the thought of all that money is driving us out of our minds.
Mary, why don't we just go to sleep?
Sleep? Oh, are you going to be able to sleep? You know what we're going to keep asking ourselves?
Yes. Yes. What could he have said?
Yes.
What could Goodson have said to the stranger?
What could he have said? I was also sure it was Goodson. Goodson had to be the benefactor. But what did he say to the stranger? Well, if you think that only Edward and Mary Richards were plagued by the question, let me tell you, they had plenty of company. No one was getting any sleep in any of the houses of the incorruptible 19. For instance, Lawyer Wilson.
What could he have said?
Hay, feed, and grain merchant Bilson.
What could he have said?
Go down the list. Robert Titmarsh, Eliphalet Weeks, Archibald Wilcox, Ingoldsby Sergeant.
What could he have said? What could he have said?
It was the only topic of conversation. The 19 incorruptibles, starting with Banker Pinkerton on top,
and ending with poor Edward Richards on bottom, walked about with white and drawn faces, as if each of them was feverishly figuring out a way to get at that money. A head of steam was building higher and higher and fiercer and fiercer. Sooner or later, it would have to bust.
And it did. You know perfectly well that what we have here is a situation where an irresistible force is about to encounter some highly movable objects. Incorruptible Hadleyburg is in for a workout. Is Mary Richards correct in her analysis? Will the town's reputation collapse under its first real test? It may. It may not. Just wait here till I return with Act Two.
If your attic has less than 6 inches of insulation on the floor, you're being robbed every day without ever knowing it. To stop the under-insulation robber and possibly save up to 30% on the cost of fuel to heat and cool your home, inspect your attic. Then see your neighborhood CertainTeed building materials dealer or insulation contractor. CertainTeed fiberglass attic insulation will stop that robber once and for all.
Oh, will it be Bill Soda? Shaving cream or prescription?
It's my hemorrhoids, Mr. Edwards. Pain. Itching.
Well, most of my customers use this.
Preparation H?
Well, in many cases, Preparation H relieves occasional pain and itch for hours.
Yeah, that's great.
And Preparation H actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation.
I'll buy that.
Doctor-tested Preparation H comes in ointment or suppositories. Soothes pain and itch and actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissue. Now use only as directed.
The most important people since people first began are children, 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 for the child is father of the man. The baby is our future, from Iceland to Japan. So care about the children, for the child is father of the man. The future of the world depends on what the children do.
Gave this song to UNICEF. The Tucson Boys Choir gave their talents. To learn what you can give, call your local UNICEF committee or write UNICEF, United Nations, New York.
The child is father of a man.
Why do you climb a mountain? Because it's there, is the usual answer. And in this case, the simplicity of the reply contains a universal truth. Nature abhors a vacuum. The very fact that something exists can motivate someone to do something about it. Here you have Mark Twain's town of Hadleyburg. It has a reputation for honesty. This fact by itself is enough to inspire someone to try to destroy the reputation. Jack Halliday continues our story.
I wish I could tell you what went on in Hadleyburg as the weeks went by, and that fateful Friday drew near. Everybody from Hadleyburg was walking around with a long face. Everyone agreed that the benefactor had to be Goodson. But one thing kind of intrigued me. Why was Reverend Burgess named as the judge or referee or whatever? Burgess, who'd been treated so shabbily by the town. Could all this be a trick on Burgess's part to get even? Reverend, I think I've been your friend.
Yes, Jack, you have.
How do you figure in this sack of gold business?
I have no idea.
When Goodson was alive, you two were close.
Well, I suppose we were kindred spirits.
Reverend, you know more than you're telling. I'm convinced of it.
Why is everyone so sure the benefactor is Goodson?
Well, who but Goodson would give a stranger $20? Oh, now, wait. You would, Reverend Burgess. You would.
Well, for that matter, Jack, so would you.
Where would I ever get $20?
If you had it, you'd give it away. And for that matter, so would poor, timid little Edward Richards. Think about it.
I thought about it. And the more I thought, the less sure I was of anything. Meanwhile, as I found out later, the mailman had been to the Richards home and left behind a letter. And what a letter.
Dear Mr. Richards, I have just returned from Europe and heard about the event in your town of Hadleyburg. You don't know who made that remark, but I do. It was Goodson.
Ah, do you see, Edward?
Shh. We were old friends. That night I passed through your town and Goodson waited with me at the railroad station. Some tramp approached him and asked for a handout. I saw him give the man the money and I heard what he said.
Edward, why would this man write...
After the tramp left, Goodson and I talked till my train arrived. He mentioned practically all of his fellow townsmen, and I could tell he actively disliked most of them.
Oh, that does sound like Goodson.
He did mention your name as a rare exception.
Oh?
He said you had done him a good turn once, and that possibly you may not have realized the full value of it.
What was that, Edward?
He said he wished he had a fortune so that he could leave it to you. Well, then, in that case, if you really did him that service, you are his legitimate heir and are entitled to the gold.
Oh!
I trust to your honor and honesty as a citizen of Hadleyburg. I will reveal to you the remark that Goodson made. This is it. You are far from being a bad man. Go and reform. Very truly yours, Howard L. Stevens.
Oh, Edward, the money is ours!
Mary, do you realize I'll have to tell a lie?
What lie?
I'll have to claim that I was the one that gave the $20 to the stranger.
Oh, that's a technicality. Edward, you read what this Mr. Stevenson said. Well, you do deserve the gold, and
why do I deserve the gold?
Why? Because, as Mr. Stevenson pointed out, you did Mr. Goodson a good turn once.
No.
What do you mean, no?
I don't remember ever having done Goodson a good turn.
Oh, come, you're always helping people.
No, I remember. I did Burgess a good turn, but not Goodson. I never had anything at all to do with Barclay Goodson. I was afraid to be seen with them.
Oh, think.
No, I didn't.
Oh.
Mary, I know all this honesty Hadleyburg brags about is a fraud, but I'm too old, and I'm too tired, and maybe I'm too frightened to change my ways, and I just won't have anything to do with it anymore.
Edward!
No, it's my very last word on the subject.
Well, that's how it was at that point with Ed and Mary Richards. That letter bore an out-of-state postmark. But do you want to know something extremely interesting about that letter? It came in 19 copies. 19. And that letter was delivered to 19 homes in the village of Hadleyburg. Each and every one of the 19 incorruptibles received it.
Dear Mr. Wilson, I have just returned from Europe.
Dear Mr. Wilson, that night I passed through your town. You're far from being a bad man. Go and reform. Good morning, Jack.
Well, Mr. Wilson.
Jack, I've been thinking. I don't advertise enough.
I agree.
I always held if you sell hay, feed, and grain, folks will come and buy what they need anyhow.
But now you've changed your mind and you won't advertise.
Yeah, you guessed it, Jack.
What's gotten into you?
Well, we got all those strangers in town on account of you know what.
Wilson, what's really on your mind?
Jack, the reporters keep asking me questions about myself, you know.
And?
Well, I don't know what to tell them.
Well, just tell them the truth.
Well, I do. But it sounds kind of stuffy.
I guess it would.
Yes. So, what I was thinking, Jack, was that you might write me a kind of short autobiography.
Belson, you're an old fraud.
Oh, Jack, you know all about me, and I'm willing to pay you.
All right, Belson, but I'm warning you. I intend to get to the bottom of this.
Jack.
Well,
it isn't old Royal Wilson himself. Your old rival Bilson was just here.
Hey, really?
Now, what can I do for you?
Well,
Do you want me to write your autobiography?
No, not at the moment, Jack. I want to arrange for some advertising.
Well, I believe it isn't ethical for lawyers to advertise in this state.
Oh, well, I wouldn't dream of advertising my law practice.
Oh, you wouldn't? Well, what would you advertise?
My intention of running for the state senate.
Say that again.
I said I intend to run for the state senate.
Oh, come on, Wilson. Who'd vote for you?
I have every prospect of victory.
You're the most unpopular man in town.
I don't know about that. I think people will be eager to vote for me.
Oh, do you? Well, why on earth should anyone even dream of voting for you?
Now, how much does a full page cost?
I'd never seen such a change in the atmosphere. Everybody walked around with a smile. Everybody seemed to have a new lease on life. That is, everybody among the 19 Hadleyburg incorruptibles. Why, even Mrs. Inglesby Sargent, who came in to give me the full information on a church supper, seemed to be bursting.
And don't forget to write, Jack, that everyone is to bring a covered dish.
I never forget.
Jack, I'm thinking of ordering some special cards.
Yes?
You know the Sheridan Mansion? Well, I think I finally convinced Inglesby to buy it.
Well, that would take a lot of money.
Oh, that's not going to be a problem very much longer.
Oh, it isn't? Why not?
Oh, that would be telling. Jack, a simple, tasteful engraved card to read Mr. and Mrs. Inglesby Sargent at home at number 1 Sheridan Place. Oh, do you suppose we could change the name of the square to Sargent Place if we own the property?
I know how much money it takes to buy that mansion, and if you've got all of it, you can afford to do anything. It made no sense at all. I couldn't account for it. What was the sudden outburst of sunshine and roses among all the 19? Bright plans, extravagant spending. Had all these people lost their minds? Only one person seemed unchanged. Edward Richards.
Mary, leave me in peace.
Edward, no. The money is rightfully ours.
But I keep telling you, I didn't do any service at all for Goodson.
And I keep telling you, it may have been some tiny, picayune thing that you can't even remember.
Don't weaken my resolve.
Goodson befriended a stranger in the presence of a witness.
Mary.
And in so doing, he made a remark. The witness, a friend of Goodson's, remembering that Goodson felt kindly to you, wants to do you a good turn. Now, that's all there is.
Oh, I could believe it. I could accept it if...
If what?
If I could ever remember doing Goodson a good turn.
Oh, Edward, you must have.
What? How?
Well, things are relative.
Oh, please, Mary. Oh,
did you ever say hello to Goodson on the street?
Well, of course.
Well, that's a good turn.
That's the
Did
the...
most people ever greet Goodson? Smile, say hello, tip their hats, shake hands, or stop to chat?
Hardly anyone. No, I didn't either. I just...
Yes?
I just smiled and nodded.
And that was enough. Oh, don't you see, Edward, that little bit.
Mary.
As Goodson said, you wouldn't know the value of it. Now, who else would say hello to Goodson? Oh, Edward, can't you see the hand of Providence? Oh, come, dear, write. Write. You are far from being a bad man. Go and reform.
Mary... Do you think I should?
I think you should. And you think you should. Now, all we need is the paper, the pen, and an envelope.
Yes, indeed, that's all you need. People do become a bit erratic, not to mention unhinged, at the prospect of a fortune in gold, or anything else, for that matter. Well, here goes incorruptible Hadleyburg. Can we salvage anything? The cleanup begins when I bring you Act 3 in just a few moments.
This Christmas, get a handyman off to a good start with Black & Decker workshop tools from True Value Hardware Stores. Hi, Pat Summerall to suggest you give the Black & Decker 7 1/4 inch circular saw. It's the first step to unlimited do-it-yourself projects. The powerful motor develops a maximum 1.5 horsepower and handles big jobs with ease. And it's just $34.99 at True Value Hardware Stores. Or give a workbench that's so light and portable you can fold it up and carry it out like a lawn chair. The Black & Decker Workmate is a portable, all-purpose workbench, a giant vise, and a sawhorse, all in one. The vise adjusts to hold wedge-shaped and other irregular objects, pipes, even bulky things like bicycles. Yet the whole workbench weighs just 24 pounds and folds flat. This Christmas, get a handyman off to a good start with a 7.25-inch circular saw and the Workmate portable workbench, both by Black & Decker, and both from participating True Value Hardware Stores. Remember, True Value, that's not just a name. That's a way of doing business. Tell them Pat Summerall sent you.
Maybe someday, the science of genetics will be so advanced that every child will be born without handicaps, with perfectly functioning minds and bodies. Maybe someday. But today, there are 7 million handicapped children, and they need special education to develop their full potential as human beings. In this country, every child has the right to the kind of education he needs, regardless of his handicaps. Yet millions are not getting it. If you have a child who is handicapped, physically, mentally, or emotionally, we have information that can help. Write Closer Look, Box 1492, Washington, D.C., 20013. Closer Look is a free service of the United States Office of Education. Write Closer Look, Box 1492, Washington, D.C., 20013. A public service message by this station for the United States Office of Education.
You are far from being a bad man. Go and reform. Such a phrase is worth in the neighborhood of $40,000, which may be small potatoes today, but it was certainly a bumper crop about 80 years ago. The question is, how many people know that phrase, and how many of them are willing to utter it? For this information, we need to hear from Jack Halliday, the local editor.
The town hall never looked finer. The place was festooned with all kinds of flags and bunting. You'd think it was the 4th of July. The sack of gold sat on a table in the center of the stage, and it made mouths water all over the house. Finally, Mr. Burgess was introduced, the Reverend Mr. Burgess. Everyone in town loved him now, and he spoke without rancor, as if nothing had happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have here in my pocket an envelope.
Mary, I'm scared.
What's to be scared
which
about?
Which I shall open. And here is the letter inside.
Mary, that on blue paper. We didn't use blue paper.
And it reads as follows. The remark which I made to the poor distressed stranger was, you are very far from being a very bad man. Go and reform. Signed, Jeremiah Bilson.
What?
Jeremiah Bilson?
It's a fake! It's a fake!
It's a fake!
Mary, did you hear something?
Order, please, order. I see that Mr. Wilson is also on his feet. Why do you rise, Mr. Wilson?
Because you called my name.
No, sir. No. I read the name Bilson, which is signed here.
I, Jeremy Bilson, signed that letter. You, Wilson, are a liar and a fraud.
I'm the one who befriended that poor stranger, Mr. Chairman. I wrote you a letter myself. I, William Wilson.
Just a moment. It seems I have another envelope in my pocket.
That's it. That's mine.
All right, then. I shall read it. The remark I made was, you are far from being a bad man. Go and reform. Signed, William Wilson.
He's lying.
Mr. Burgess.
Order, please.
Mr. Burgess.
The chair recognizes Jack Halliday.
Both of them couldn't have made the same remark. Both of them didn't. Mr. Bilson said you are very far from being a very bad man. Wilson said you are far from being a bad man. No, very.
Therefore,
you should open the sack, sir, and read what the test remark is.
Very well. With your permission, ladies and gentlemen, I hereby break the seals and open the sack.
Mary, Mary, what have we done? Do you suppose he has our letter in his pocket?
I find here two envelopes. One is marked the test remark. On the other it says not to be opened until all written communications addressed to the chair have been read.
Let's hear the test remark, Mr. Burgess.
This is what the benefactor claims he said. You are far from being a bad man. Go and reform.
That settles it. That's exactly what I said. And Bilson is a liar and a fraud, and I'll tell you how...
Mr. Wilson, you're out of order.
No. I insist. I am the man who befriended the stranger. I know what I said. I was in my office writing this note to you, Mr. Burgess, when Bilson came in on business, and he may have seen the note on my desk. And therefore,
that's an infamous lie.
Yes, and he couldn't even copy it correctly.
Order, gentlemen, order. Neither of you has quoted the remark correctly. Order, please. The full remark is, you are far from being a bad man. Go and reform. Or, mark my words, someday for your sins you will die and go to hell or Hadleyburg and try to make it the former.
That's the hallmark on it, eh?
Order!
Mr. Chairman, 2 out of 19 incorruptibles have succumbed to temptation, I think. Our fair town of Hadleyburg now has a new image.
I will sue any man who impugns my honesty.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I move we adjourn this meeting.
We cannot do so at this point, Mr. Halliday.
Why not?
Because we have other claimants for the prize. I have received a number of letters. Perhaps one of them can repeat the true remark.
Oh, Mary, we're doomed. You'll be disgraced.
Letter number 3. You are far from being a bad man. Signed, Inglesby Sargent. You are far from being a very bad man.
Which incorruptible is that?
Nicholas Whitwell. You are very far from being a very bad man.
Well, it became a picnic after that. The house was in hysterics. One by one, the incorruptibles were stripped naked. Figuratively speaking, that is.
Mary, we're going to be disgraced. Oh, Mary, why did we do it?
I don't know whatever got into me, Edward. Oh, forgive me.
He's saving us for last. I know it. Oh, Mary. Oh, all I ever had was my good name. Now, I don't even have that.
Oh, pray. That's all we have left. Pray that Burgess will be merciful.
Yes, let us pray.
Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that's all.
Mr. Burgess, how many of those letters did you receive?
19.
Well, sir, I've been holding count, and you only read 18.
Oh, did I? I must have been mistaken. I guess it was only 18.
18? We have 19 incorruptibles in Hadleyburg. But only one of them is the genuine article. Only one is truly as advertised. I propose a cheer for the cleanest man in town. The only so-called important citizen who didn't try to steal that money. Edward Richards!
And now I shall read the other letter in the sack. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no test remark. Nobody ever made one.
What?
Order, order, please. Order. There was no beggar, no contribution. At one time, I passed through your town. I was offended by your lofty, snobbish pretensions. I was insulted by your overbearing vanity. I decided to discover if your vaunted integrity was genuine. And now you have seen what I have done. I'm sure I caught every last man to whom I wrote that letter tipping off the test remark.
That's right. He did, down to the last man.
Well, the contents of the sack belong to all who claimed it.
Now, wait a minute. You mean these sharpers get the gold after all?
Order, please, ladies and gentlemen. I must abide by the instructions. And so I shall now cut open the sack and distribute the contents among...
What is it, Mr. Burgess?
Friends, this isn't gold. These are just gilded pieces of lead.
Yes,
Jack.
Mr. Chairman, I propose we auction off the sack and give the proceeds to the one honest, incorruptible left, Ed Richards.
Yes, oh, sir. Let's
do it. Come on.
All right.
May I speak? My name is Stevenson.
Mary, it's that Mr. Stevenson.
Stevenson?
Do any of you gentlemen know me? I am a collector in rare coins and curiosities. And I think I might buy this collection. And on it, engrave the names of the 18 incorruptibles.
Sir, I'm an attorney, and I warn you, I will sue you to the inch of your life.
I beg you, sir, not to threaten me. I know my rights. You and anyone else can prevent me from gaining possession by outbidding me. $1,000.
Two.
Three.
Keep it up, gentlemen. Keep it up.
Four.
Remember, the proceeds go to Ed and Mary Richards. Finest, most
six
honest...
Thousand.
Do I hear eight?
10,000!
10,000!
Mary,
10,000.
I must confess.
All right,
I don't know what to tell you.
I won't be tempted again. I won't.
Listen to the bidding. It's so much money. We could be comfortable for the rest of our lives.
Mary, I should confess, but I can't.
15,000 there.
Burgess, why did he save me to...
Maybe he lost the letter.
25.
$36,000. I'm going to confess.
$36,000. 37. 37, I hear.
And will the auctioneer... Will the auctioneer grant a slight intermission? I must consult with... We will have a 10-minute intermission.
Thank you.
During which time, the 18 incorruptibles got together to pool their resources, and finally they bought the sack for $50,000.
Oh, Edward, I'm exhausted.
Well, finally, we can go to bed.
Oh, but I won't be able to sleep.
I know. $50,000.
Oh.
Mary, I can't believe what happened.
We'll be given the check in the morning. You'll believe it then.
Suppose
what?
Suppose this is Mr. Burgess's way of getting revenge. He was accused of adultery, but I knew it was a lie. I could have saved his reputation. I didn't.
Edward.
No, Mary. Now he's waiting. Don't you see? He's toying with me. Let the town praise me, and then he'll produce that letter and destroy me.
Edward, you don't know that.
No, I'm going to confess everything.
Where are you going?
Out. I'm going to tell everyone I see that I tried to steal the money, too.
Edward!
We thought he was mad. He went through the streets bareheaded, without a coat, stopping people, knocking at doors. We thought the ordeal had been too much for him. But no, he convinced us. And then Hadleyburg really fell. Our last incorruptible was gone. Literally. Because that night he caught the fever that killed him. And I was with him. at his last hour. The Reverend Burgess came to visit.
Edward, I would never have betrayed you.
You would. You would have.
I destroyed the letter you sent. I wanted to save you. You, after all, saved my life once by warning me.
No. You were angry with me because I could have cleared your name. But you see, I was afraid and you... And you hated me for it. You were waiting for revenge.
Poor Edward. You couldn't have cleared me. You had no real evidence to offer. You see, I was to blame. I was guilty. Like everyone else, I'm only human. Like everyone else, I too could be tempted. Hadleyburg is a well-corrupted village.
I guess there isn't an awful lot more to tell. Hadleyburg had its name changed by special permission of the legislature. And what its new one is, I won't say. But we're a town now, like other towns. Neither better or worse. But at least we're human. Which is about as good or as bad a thing as you can say about anyone. Thank you kindly for your attention.
And thank you, Jack Halliday. This has been a visit into the Mark Twain country of Hadleyburg. And you can find a Hadleyburg almost anywhere you look, even in your own hometown. And you can look for me to be back here in just a few moments.
Oh, we got the whole week shopping done in just 45 minutes.
And you know why? Because why? During the dinner hour, everybody's home. The stores
that's right.
Are empty.
The store's empty, that's true. Look at this. Somebody's broken in, that's what
hey,
it is. Look
robbed?
At the china closets on its side.
Crime statistics show that most home break-ins occur during daylight hours, that they're frequently done by kids who cause as much vandalism as theft. Now you can get instant protection with the Ultrason X from Master Lock, the name that means security. It's an electronic burglar alarm that just plugs into any wall outlet, like a radio. Instant protection that costs less than you might think. It sends out ultrasonic waves that sense an intruder's movement and set off a loud alarm. And the Ultrason X can set off remote alarms, too, plugged in elsewhere in the house, or even next door. For the name of your nearest Master Lock alarm dealer, call this toll-free number, 800-528-6050. Right now, call 800-528-6050.
Is it time, perhaps, for some new holiday decorating around your house? The current family circle is ready with dozens of different decorations you can make, and quite easily. Go European country style, for instance, with a tree hung with tiny crocheted baskets and snowflake and bird ornaments made from, of all things, wooden toothpicks. Or give in to the kids and make your ornaments edible of candy canes and lots of popcorn joined together with caramel syrup. From Williamsburg, Virginia, come front door decors of colonial vintage. You make them from natural materials, spruce branches, nuts, fruit. Family Circle also has some new table settings for that holiday party. White lace runners on brown velveteen with easy-to-fashion artificial flowers. Very elegant. On the December Family Circle cover, there's a Christmas wreath that looks just like stained glass. The issue is now at your supermarket checkout counter. This is Jack Sterling for Family Circle, the world's largest selling woman's magazine.
Temptation. The temptation of the flesh and the temptations of the spirit. Who can withstand them? We human beings are so ill-equipped. We have so many desires, so many conceits, so much vanity. And so every time you deplore a justifiably condemnable offense, take consolation in this one thought. Given the foibles of the human race, we can be glad things aren't a lot worse. Mark Twain settled for that. Our cast included Fred Gwynn, Ralph Bell, Joan Shea, Earl Hammond, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Chinese seismologists have sounded a new alert. Another earthquake may hit northern China soon. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. With more on the China earthquake prediction, here is Mike Chinoy in Hong Kong.
An official Chinese spokesman told foreigners in Peking that two new quakes were likely in the near future. The spokesman said one, possibly measuring as high as 6 on the Richter scale, was expected near the city of Tongshan, 100 miles from Peking. Tongshan was devastated by a giant quake in July and was near the epicenter of another big quake only last Monday. The spokesman said the other quake was forecast for southeast of Peking and was expected to register about 5 on the Richter scale. Residents of Peking are being told the capital will definitely be affected if the predicted quakes do occur and are being urged to take all necessary precautions. But so far, there have been no signs of people evacuating their homes and moving into makeshift shelters in the streets, as they did after the big earthquake last July. Mike Chinoy for CBS News, Hong Kong.
More news in a moment.
The French call it an apéritif. In America, it's the appetizer you drink. Either way, Dubonnet goes before.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Dubonnet. Before a meal by day or night, Dubonnet is always right. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. And whether you call it an apéritif or an appetizer, the proper time to enjoy its distinctive taste is before. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It's a wine that's right for your appetite. Dubonnet Before. Made to make what comes after that much better.
Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Product of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Canadian and American officials remain at odds on when the radioactive cloud from Wednesday's Chinese nuclear test in the atmosphere will reach America. The Environmental Protection Agency in Washington says it will reach northern Washington state in about 5 hours. But in Ottawa, Canadian health officials say they don't expect the cloud to reach the West Coast before the middle of next week. They term the American prediction premature. California Health Department spokesman Bob Nance says when the cloud reaches his state, heavy radioactive fallout is not expected.
We are not anticipating readings that would present a public health threat, but we will be watching. If anything undue should occur, we certainly will make public announcements. In addition, just as an extraordinary precautionary measure, we're going to start checking milk samples from Northern California, starting perhaps on Tuesday.
Patricia Hearst, appealing her federal bank robbery conviction and still facing California charges of kidnapping and robbery, is home with her parents for the first time since her abduction 2 years and 9 months ago. Her father, newspaper publisher Randolph Hearst, and his twin brother David put up $100,000 first payment on a $1 million federal bond and $500,000 bail ordered by a state court. Condemned murderer Gary Gilmore is reported on a hunger strike in his Utah State prison cell following his unsuccessful suicide attempt earlier this week. Gilmore said through his lawyer that he would not eat until he was allowed to talk to his fiancée, Nicole Barrett. The woman, who also attempted suicide this week, Friday was transferred to a psychiatric institution in Utah after being described as still suicidal. Her doctors say they'll not allow her to receive a call from Gilmore. President-elect Carter received an intensive six-hour briefing on top-secret intelligence matters from Central Intelligence Agency Director George Bush. The meeting at Mr. Carter's home in Plains, Georgia, lasted twice as long as had been expected. Saturday, Secretary of State Kissinger makes the flight south to Plains. Now this.
I'm Charles Kuralt, CBS News. I'd like to take you on a four-day, 42-broadcast holiday over the Thanksgiving weekend. This special series is called Portraits of These United States. From Massachusetts, the voices that cried out for liberty. From Louisiana, the story of a battle that changed our history. We'll relive a moment of history in all the other states as well. Listen for Portraits of These United States, Thanksgiving Day through Sunday the 28th, on most of these CBS radio network stations.
Hey, they finally got old Jim to quit smoking.
Oh, really?
You remember how he used to smoke three packs a day?
I sure do.
Even after the doctor told him he had emphysema?
Yeah.
Well, last week, they finally got him to quit. Cold turkey.
I can't believe it. How'd they do it?
Simple.
What?
They put him in an oxygen tent.
Oh.
Cigarettes and emphysema make great bed partners. Keep smoking, and that's probably where you'll end up. Your local lung association considers it a matter of life and breath.
President and Mrs. Ford are reported to have decided definitely to sell their home in suburban Alexandria, Virginia. Mrs. Ford is quoted by UPI as telling friends that she and the president have decided to go elsewhere after leaving the White House in January. The Ford home in Alexandria, although equipped with a swimming pool, is too small to provide room for the Secret Service detail and aides who will constitute Mr. Ford's retirement staff. The president looked at homes in Palm Springs, California while vacationing there last week, but according to friends, the Fords have not made a final decision on where they'll live. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
It's 45 degrees in downtown Seattle at 6 minutes past 11 o'clock on KIXI.